Because he sits on his throne, all else happens with dignity and reasonableness around him. This king is unimaginably beautiful.
This is KZSU, Stanford. We interrupt the Omen service to announce that Mystery Playhouse cannot air this week due to our special Richard Simmons live from the Aerobic Center in Palo Alto.
I want everyone to stop and for just a moment because I have someone very special here. Someone very special I want you all to listen to where she comes up. Laura, why don't you come on up here? Big round of applause for Laura. Here she is. Isn't she gorgeous? You should have seen her 6 months ago. Then you'd say she's gorgeous now. No, really. We're just kidding, Laura. Listen, you look great. You look great. Nice leotard.
Thank you. I feel great.
You should. Hey, everybody, before we forget about it, why don't you take your pulse, okay? Let's make sure it's not running too high. We're looking for those mid-60s. That's a fat-burning range. Okay, that feels good. All right, everybody, any hands? Okay, good. Something I want you all to hear. Yes, even you all back there in the back who keep laughing. I sure wish I knew what you were laughing at. You want to come up and tell us all? No? Okay. Now listen, Laura.
Yeah.
Laura, I want you to tell us what it is that you wanted to tell us.
Well, Richard, I know I'm not a beauty queen.
I'm not a beauty queen either. now you get it. Oh, no, really, Laura. Laura. No. Hi. Stop it out there. Stop it. Laura has a thing to say. Tell us, Laura. We're all ears.
Okay. I've lost 5 pounds.
5 pounds? That's 5 more pounds than most people.
And I feel great.
And of course you feel great. We all feel great. Don't we? Listen, Laura. Laura, that's absolutely wonderful. I want everybody out there, big round of applause for Laura. Let's hear it. Yay. Woo. Woo. You heard it. Okay.
Thank you. You
know what time it is now? It's time for us to start back up where the music left off. And that means more action, excitement on the radio.
Wait
a minute, Laura. Something more to say. Go ahead, Laura. We're all ears. Cut it with the music. No more. Go ahead, Laura.
Mystery Playhouse is brought to you by a grant from Comics, Toys...
Sid quote, Mystery Playhouse is sponsored by Comics, Toys, and Games at 405 California Avenue, unquote. We now return you to the music of Raymond Ricello playing for you.
Those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute, something's happening.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast.
Now here's another bulletin from Washington, D.C.
Martial law prevails throughout. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make.
So that we may confront this destructive adversary.
Everything wiped out. This may be the last broadcast. We'll stay here to the end.
There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume.
We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass.
Or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want because this is
Mystery Playhouse. 90.1.
Stardate 54666.9. The Enterprise is in orbit around the outpost colony world of Rival 2, on orders from the Federation Agriculture Division to try and find a solution to the destructive plague of Dranzes, which wipes out 70 to 90% of the grain crop every sixth year. A landing party of Dr. McCoy, First Officer Spock, and myself has beamed down to the Rivolian surface to survey the problem firsthand. Mr. Newt Henderson of the Rybolian Settlers League has taken us in hand.
Mr. Henderson, you realize that none of us has ever seen a Dranzer.
So, if you knew Dranzers, Captain Kirk, you wouldn't wonder why we're making this little trip by air instead of on land.
I confess that our hands have been cleaned as quickly as the Starfleet records are.
Let's see if I can fill you in then, Mr. Spock, wasn't it? A Dranzer looks like a cross between a pig and a buffalo. They have long black hair, flat quadruple horns, an ugly disposition, and are about half the size of an earthly elephant.
So it's their size which makes them a threat to you.
Yeah, and the fact that they breed like rabbits. When this world was first settled 12 years ago, they weren't considered a danger. They stayed in the hilly grasslands on the western part of this continent. We grew our grain in the central and eastern plains regions. Everything was fine until 6 years ago. We noticed then that the Drangers were so thick they nearly walked on each other. But we had no reason to suspect they would
come down onto
the shore. We don't know why. Too many Drangers, too little food maybe, but they panicked. Came down out of the hills like a black avalanche and ruined the whole crop for that year. Nearly ruined the colony. But we hung on, replanted, and have done well since then. Except...
with 6 more years and the Dranger population is up again. You expect another continent-wide stampede.
Yeah. Ah, there they are. Now, you see what I mean. I'll cut our engine and we'll glide in over them. Otherwise, the noise is liable to start the stampede.
They're like locusts.
I'm going to have to pull us out of here, gentlemen. Our shadow is making them nervous.
Never mind. I think we've seen enough to give us some idea of the size of your problem.
What do you suggest we do? We have been petitioning Starfleet for help for years.
What about simply reducing the herds through selective pruning?
No. We tried that 3 years ago when the herds first began to grow too big again. For one thing, it started a premature stampede which ruined several thousand square kilometers of maturing foothill cropland. As you might guess, the farmers in that area won't permit a repetition of that disaster. But there's another, more important reason.
Which is?
There's a high grass which germinates in the hills. It would take over the plains, except that the Dranzer herds keep it cut back. If we were to kill off the Dranzers, our agriculture experts tell us that in a decade, the grass would take over every meter of arable land on the continent. We have to find some way of controlling the Dranzers without letting the grass get out of control. But if we leave the natural cycle alone, the racial stampede will occur within a half year, and we'll lose another entire year's crop.
The problem would appear insoluble, Captain.
That's not what we pay taxes to hear, Mr. Spock.
I fear that government is rarely run according to scientific principles, Mr. Wilson. But we will. We must do something.
I hope so, Mr. Spock. Captain Kirk. I sincerely hope so.
You said the full stampede was expected within 6 months.
It could happen tomorrow, too. Or next week, according to the biostatisticians, the herds are already at critical size.
That does not give us much time to feel our best respective solutions.
That's not our fault. We have been trying to get some action out of Starfleet for years.
Starfleet has many concerns, sir. We'll do the best we can for you.
Captain Kirk, we've got several hundred thousand kilometers of ripe food grains just about ready for harvesting, and they could be trampled into compost any day now. If it is, you'd better believe your superiors are going to hear of it.
Old-fashioned doorways, they still have here.
And if Henderson is typical of the Rebolian settlers, the people are pretty old-fashioned themselves. Such folk don't take catastrophe quietly. He's right. They can make trouble for us with headquarters.
Well, what do they expect from us, Bone? We're not responsible for the ecological setup on this world. The Dranger stampede never bothered anyone until the colony here expanded to bring two-thirds of this continent under intensive cultivation.
True, Captain. Bear in mind that the Dranzers do not vote. I have, however, thought of a possible solution which will only bend and not tear the natural fabric of this planet.
Well?
It involves a considerable risk on the part of those involved, Captain.
Wait a minute, Spock. If this is something you regard as a considerable risk, I'm not sure I want any part of it.
I'm afraid that your knowledge of organic chemistry is required, Doctor. But first, we must capture a large Dranzer, the largest Dranzer we can.
Capture one? What on Rybel for?
The explanation derives logically, Doctor.
You wanted to see me, Captain Kirk?
Yes, Henderson. Spock and Dr. McCoy beamed up to the Enterprise and have been working around the clock on your problem. They think they've come up with a solution. First, we need a number of those high-speed ground vehicles your people use.
Wait a minute now. We asked for Federation aid. Why should we have to supply...
You want us to stop this stampede or not?
All right. If that's what you need, you'll have them. But by heaven, those ground cars are specially built for high-speed travel on Rybellion terrain. If you get them banged up...
Precious vehicles.
And now, I'd like to hear this miracle your people have produced.
They should be beaming down any minute now. I'll let them tell you about it in person.
Here it is, Jim.
That's all? That one little tank? It can't hold more than a couple of liters of...
of what's in it, anyway?
1.8 liters, to be precise. But that will be...
Diverters with these?
Not stop, Mr. Anderson.
Divert? Assuming that this little pop bottle of whatever it is can do anything, where do you propose to divert the herds to? And keep them diverted. They've been stampeding, according to the best evidence, in the same paths across the continent for thousands, millions of years.
All with them. Have we the properly equipped vehicles?
Standing by, Spock, with local drivers. When I explained what we were going to do, most of our would-be volunteers quietly disappeared. The drivers we have left are brave people.
Excellent. Then all that is left is to transfer a portion of the liquid in this container into the equipment on each vehicle. Then...
Come in.
Just got this from the DeLautre family ranch in the Norfolk Quadrant. One of their outposters for scouting up in the hills.
Thanks, Ellie.
Well, what does it say?
We're too late. You're too late. I should have known not to rely on Starfleet again. The stampede's already begun.
Then we have no time to waste, gentlemen. Captain, Dr. McCoy, you will be set for fear. Mr. Henderson, how much time have we before the herd leaders reach the third rate? In case we fail, these of this should stand up.
Wait a minute. You don't propose to try something now. You can't expect to stop several million animals already in full stampede.
I said that. Remember, not stop. Captain, Dr. McCoy, are we ready?
I hope you know what you're doing, Spock. If this doesn't work, they're going to have to scrape us off the ground.
If it doesn't work, a lot of people here will be ruined, Doctor. And many elsewhere will go hungry. It must work. Besides, the percentages are in our favor. They are...
Never mind. I don't want to hear. I might want to back out.
Of course, everything depends on your accurate synthesis of the necessary liquid.
Thanks, Spock.
I hope your Mr. Spock knows what he's doing, Captain.
He usually does.
He better this time. There's no way out for us, you know. We can't go right or left to escape the herds. If this doesn't work, we've had it. Look back there, out the rear window. See that dust cloud? In a way, it is. There must be 100 million animals in full stampede along a 2,000-kilometer long front, and they average about 2 tons apiece. Do you know what they'll do to this vehicle and us if they overtake us? There won't be enough left of us to bury.
Captain,
there's one. What is station one?
Very good, Captain. I'm approximately 600 kilometers due north of your position. Dr. McCoy's group is a single distance north of mine. Can you see the bird?
We'll see the dust cloud there, Raven.
Good. The engine tanks on your vehicles and start along the charted course.
Captain,
Dr. McCoy?
I heard, Spock. We're all set at this end. Jim?
I'm here, Bones.
If this idea of Spock fails, I want his corpse court-martialed.
Appropriate action will be taken.
How long is he going to wait?
I'm pretty sure the timing is right.
Timing? Look behind us again. The dust is beginning to blot out the sun. Pretty soon we'll see the front wall of the herd. Do you know how far and how fast a Drandra can run, Captain? If we run out of fuel, or have a mechanical problem, or this crazy idea doesn't work, we've no place to run. I can make out individual animals now. They'll be on us in another few minutes. Here, you, Commander Spock, what's going on? What are you waiting for?
The correct moment, Mr. Johnson.
Correct moment? Look, in another couple of minutes, we're all going to be a smear on the landscape. If you don't...
Very well. Dr. McCoy, you will open the valve
for your test. You can smell it even in here. What's in that canister anyway?
Spock discovered a brand new and very short eye. The herd with this producer must be older than the others follow. We have Dr. McCoy looking at that to test brand new. It was concentrated several hundred thousand times. To the animals leading the herd, we must smell like the most powerful brand new ever lived. They must have been released by Mr. Spock and Dr. McCoy's group along the whole front of the herd. You have our cross-powered?
Yes, yes.
And let's get moving.
With pleasure.
It's working. They're turning slightly. Yes, they're following us.
And up here. Good work, Spock.
Captain, we can't keep this up forever. We've been running at this speed for nearly a whole day. Even with the extra fuel tanks I had installed, we can't continue at this speed much longer. We've covered so much territory already in this dust that... Hey, what's that up ahead?
We got wheel alone. What are you doing?
Don't you see? We're headed right into them again. They're behind us, too. We're trapped. Don't you see? We're trapped.
Get a hold of yourself, Anderson.
Back in? Following us?
All vehicles stand by to execute
maneuver.
Ready,
Spock.
Ready.
I don't understand, Captain. It's the herd, but they're passing behind us. They're not following anymore. Control Group 3 to Group 2. Group 3 calling Group 2.
Group 2 here. Is that you, Landowner Henderson?
Accept my personal apology, along with the thanks of every farmer on Ribo 2. You've solved our problem, now and for the future.
You're welcome, Mr. Henderson. But there is a penalty.
Penalty?
One cannot alter nature without reaping consequences. The millions of dead transes which used to scatter across the great plains of this continent will not lie in your fields this year. Their bodies used to fertilize the ground. Now, you must move the corpses to your fields or import artificial fertilizers if you expect your fields to keep producing good grain in the future.
But, Mr. Spock, that means moving 100 million Dranser bodies.
A considerable task. Group 2 out.
200 million tons? Captain, do you think that Starfleet would...
I'm sorry. Starfleet has saved your crops for you. But even Starfleet can only do so much. You're going to have to learn to help yourselves a little, too. Now, I suggest you get in touch with the rest of your neighbors and fellow farmers. The sooner you begin moving those bodies behind us, the better. Because if all those bodies begin to decompose in one place, and if the wind changes, you're going to have a very good grain crop. But an awfully smelly year.
Thank you.
Oh, Vampirella.
Oh, but frighteningly happy music.
Wasn't that such a brilliant disguise of Superman? That was Mel Brooks off his album. It had supposedly nothing to do with Superman, but we know better, that tune.
That's a tricky guy, Miss Williams.
I tell you, which brings us up to our next scary feature, The Adventures of Superman. And we've got much more scariness coming out until that on Mystery Playhouse, so don't go away. Take it away, Superman, baby.
Presenting the transcription feature, Superman.
Look, up in the sky.
It's a bird. It's a plane.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman. Strange visitor from the planet Krypton, who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, who can leap tall buildings at a single bound, race a speeding bullet to its target, bend steel in his bare hands, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth and justice.
And
on the world of Zerf, in the fifth dimension, is a civilization with certain striking similarities to our own. For example, their language is very close to English, except for certain words that have no vowel sounds. On this world lives an impish, practical joking gentleman whom we can begin to overhear as he dictates his recorded diary. His name?
Last time I went to Earth, I made everyone in Metropolis speak a different language. The time before, I made all the statues come alive and take over the city. The time before that, I gave everyone in town magical powers like mine. And Superman went bonkers trying to keep the whole coast from blowing off. But every time I showed up, old Muscle Brains managed to trick me into saying my name backwards and magically sending myself home to the fifth dimension. Ha! Those Earth rubes can barely say Mixtuptook forward, let alone... Hey, there's an idea. Those lunkheads' words are all peppered with vowels. A's and E's all over the place. I's, O's, U's in nearly every word they've got. What if they couldn't make those sounds anymore, hey? Wow, I'm off!
Meanwhile, several dimensions away in Metropolis' fabulous Galaxy Communications building...
I'd just like to see what you do to get out of this one, Clark Kent. We were both sitting in that helicopter yesterday when all of a sudden Superman swooped down from the sky to save the little girl falling from the building. I turned to see if you got a picture of it, and...
And lo and behold, I'm not in my seat. Right, Lois?
And you know what I think that means.
Oh, nonsense, Lois. There's a perfectly reasonable explanation.
How long do you need to dream it up this time? No, I've got you dead to rights and... Eve! Clark! Out the window! The plane's about to crash. Oh, but Clark, what's wrong with me? I meant to tell Clark that plane's about to crash. What's wrong with me? Why do I sound funny?
Excuse me, Lois. Keep walking at Clark's foot. What's going on? I meant to say, why can't I talk to you?
For at the very moment an out-of-control plane threatens to make Midtown Metropolis its landing strip, the pair of reporters find that their speech has been impaired. Nonetheless, Clark Kent darts down the hall to a storeroom.
No time to trade quips with Lois about being tongue-tied together. This is
up, up and away flies the Man of Steel to catch the tumbling plane on his harder-than-steel shoulders without a wince. And the city, watching from below, breathes a mute sigh of relief as slowly, gradually, the plane is set on its own course without damage. The city is mute because no one... No one at all can utter the sound of a vowel.
That pilot got disoriented when instructions over his radio came in with no vowels. He lost control. What can I say? What words have no vowels? Why? Rhythm? Can't make a sentence out of those words. Wait, there's another word that has no vowels. And that's the word I'm betting is responsible for this mess. Mixed Patok!
You rang, Soupy?
You little rang, you ridiculous little creep.
You bet I rang, you ridiculous little creep. Are those the words you're looking for, physical one?
What's your business, Miss Lulay? Let me talk, will you?
What's the idea of this mess anyway? Let me talk, will you? Oh, you want to talk, do you? Are you sure you have something to contribute to this conversation?
You bet I do, you... Hey... new magic me. I can talk.
Very observant, locker room breath. You were saying?
I was saying you're mad, insane, missing your mark. You're the only opponent I've ever run into who's made me actually lose my temper.
More fun than daytime TV, hey, Soupy Baby?
When are you going to give the bowels back to the rest of the people in town?
Not in the foreseeable future. Matter of fact, I was thinking of depriving the two of us pretty soon as well.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't, would you? No, no, no.
Yes, yes, yes. Bye-bye.
As the imp from the fifth dimension vanishes, his mischievous magic stays behind, and a tongue-tied city as well as its super-powered guardian have their hands full.
Fix the folks. Been on Earth just a few hours, and already I've had to help the control tower at the airport by hand-carrying 17 planes to a landing before closing the runway. Then I broke up 46 arguments and were turning into street fights because people couldn't make themselves understood. What next?
Hey, Superman!
Fix the folks?
The first Metropolis Bank. Want to stop it?
He says, Metropolis Bank. Want to stop it? You bet I want to stop it.
As the Metropolis Marvel streaks to the scene at the bank across town, a small-time thug threatens already panicky people with a gun when... Whether or not he has the gift of speech, bullets still bounce harmlessly off the indestructible chest of a man of steel. And the would-be robber is momentarily rendered harmless to everyone else as well.
Superman says he figured something out right here in this bank. Will wonders never cease?
There is nothing you can't see without vowels. I told the imp there's one sentence I can say without vowels. And he's curious. I'll write it down for him. Akol kapoz yetsom.
That's loaded with vowels. Soupy's gone crackers, and I'll prove it by showing him how this vowel-less wonder sounds when I pronounce it without the vowels. Kultabzixum. Hey, that's my name spelled backwards. My magic's gone, and I'm going too. I'll get back at you, you super creepo. You just wait.
I can talk again.
So can I. Haven't we ever thanked you, Superman?
That won't be necessary, ladies and gentlemen, but right now.
And soon, at the Galaxy Building, Clark Kent and Lois Lane resume their long-standing argument.
All right, Clark. I can buy the idea that you panicked and ran off when you thought you were losing your voice. That's what a lot of people did. But you still can't explain away your disappearance in the helicopter yesterday.
Well, as I was about to explain, I ran to the back of the Whirlybird to see what was going on more clearly as Superman saved the little girl.
Sure, I'll bet you saw it clearly. I'm supposed to believe that.
Will you believe these photos? You didn't notice that your camera vanished at that moment, too. Does that mean the camera is secretly Superman, too?
Pictures of Superman saving the falling child. You took these with my camera, Clark?
Sure shooting. What I didn't say is that I set up the camera outside the copter and took the shutter with super breath from long distance.
Clark, I don't know how you wheedle out of these things.
I tell you what, Lois. Since it was your camera, you can put them in the Daily Planet under your own name. Maybe that'll teach you to be more trusting.
Blinny.
Thank you. Alfred Hitchcock present, hoping you will forgive my chronic yawning. I can assure you that I'm not bored in the least. You see, science tells us that the yawn is really the result of a small lack of oxygen. However, the prolonged absence of oxygen results in death or serious brain retardation. Which reminds me, here's our sponsor.
Escape is brought to you by Primetime Radio of San Jose. Join KZSU every Thursday night at 10:30 for more classic radio theater with Escape.
Perhaps I am a little bored after all, but our feature should change all that. And as far as oxygen is concerned, I will leave you with this final tip. You can double your supply of air by cutting off someone else's. So without wasting any more breath on the subject, here is Judgment Day at Crippled Deer.
This is KZSU, Stamford.
Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. You are one of four people trapped in an isolated trading post somewhere in the Yukon Territory. The blizzard outside making escape impossible. And you know that before the spring thaws release you, before you can leave this cabin behind you, one of your companions, by consent of the others, will be killed. Listen now as Escape brings you Les Crutchfield's story, Judgment Day at Crippled Deer. And most unlikely that you ever heard of Crippled Deer Crossing, and you would have great difficulty locating it on a map, even though the Yukon for the most part is vast and empty. Crippled Deer is a trading post, one sprawling pine log building, nothing more. But it's been my home and my business for 20 years now, and in the course of time I have grown fond of it, even grown fond of the bitter cruelty of the Great North. Yes, fond too of the long winters, snowbound, dark, when the trappers and miners have all gone outside, and we wait alone for the coming of spring. But of one such winter I am not fond. I still wake at times from dreaming of it, lie shuddering and fearful in the darkness. That was the winter of the black snow, when the horror came moaning on the wind and no man could look in another's eyes. Without shame and loathing and hate.
Listen, LeClaire. Listen to it. I know that sound and the gray skies and the black in the west. It's going to hit us before tomorrow morning.
Oh, it's close, all right. What do you think, Joe?
Many wolf track in snow last night. Much hunting. Bear now asleep. I think maybe one day... Maybe two, then big blizzard come.
All right, 2 days then. That's still cutting it too close. You ought to be here by now.
Real anxious, ain't you, fella? Just can't wait. Honey, what smart you got that we ain't got?
You wouldn't know, Higgins.
You would know, wouldn't you, sweetheart?
At least he's got a civil tongue in his head. And he's also got a lot of things you'd give your right arm for, Higgins. He knows how to laugh and live and how to make other people laugh and live.
I'll bet he does.
And he knows how to treat a woman.
Yeah, any woman the way I hear it.
You shut that mouth of yours right now or I'll make you wish you had.
You will.
Higgins, in a day or two now the blizzard comes. Close the trails. And we here, then all of us together the rest of the winter. Here, this one building, no way to get out. I tell you once and for all, I will not have this kind of feeling.
Then let him shut up.
That's a good joke.
That's enough, Higgins. You've got a right to be worried. I'm worried myself. Marco and Blakey don't have enough grub up there. If they get snowed into that mine, they can't possibly last out the winter. And that blizzard is close. Should have come down by now.
I was just funning her, LeClaire. Sorry, Bill.
Then watch what you're saying.
Don't worry. They'll make it all right. Why, Marco Moore knows more about this country and the weather than most people.
No talk. He's down. What is it, Joe? Joe Keith. Sled coming.
Marco. Must be Marco and Blakey.
Where's those binoculars? Maybe we can see them when they come through the gap, huh?
Keegan, help me open the window.
Might not be them, Belle. Could be Robertson.
Not him. He's too smart a Monty to get snowed in this far from Dawson. Come on, push.
All right, here. Let me see now. It's nearly too dark to... Hey, there's a sled, all right, coming out of the gap.
It's them. It is them, isn't it?
I can't quite make... No, it's only one man.
A Marty.
No, not Robertson. It's Blakey. But Marco is not with him.
What?
Blakey coming in alone.
Alone?
Two partner go. One come back very bad.
No, shut up, Joe. Don't pay any attention to him, Belle. Marco is all right.
He better be. For Blakey's sake, he better be.
They've been partners 3 seasons now, pal. There's no reason to think anything is wrong.
You look, dog, Chief. Lead dog. Marco's dog.
Pop.
He's right. It's that big husky with a white star. Marco got him 2 years ago.
Water up the man, Ben. Bring up the girl. Blake is back.
I don't know. I just don't know.
Prodigal son, Ben, starved for a fatted calf and maybe a glass or two of rye whiskey.
Blakey.
Well, LeClaire, uglier than ever. Indian Joe, what are you having to tribe, huh? Higgins, look at that porch.
That bell. Ah, sweetheart, you make up for all of them. Gorgeous.
Blakey, where's Marco?
Marco? Well, ain't he here yet?
Should he be?
Well, he pulled out a few days before I did. I stayed on till yesterday working the claim. Of course, he might have stopped off someplace.
Where? Stopped off where?
Well, maybe at Jackson River. The factory at the post there's got a pair of mighty pretty daughters, Belle.
You better get your dogs out of harness, Blakey, and get your stuff inside. It may start snowing.
Yeah, looks like it's building up a good one. Say, Blakey, that lead dog there, he's new, ain't he? Why, I guess you could call it that. That's Marco's dog. Marco traded with me. He figured I'd be running closer to the storm, so I'd need a better lead dog than he would, so he traded with me. I see. You see what? What's this all about, Jack? Like it's a matter of life and death.
Four of us talked it over while Blakey was unpacking his sled. It didn't add up. We agreed on that. At least it didn't add up the way Blakey was claiming. He was a born liar, we knew that, and Marco should have been at the trading post by now even if he had stopped off at Jackson River. Now, when Blakey came in, we ate and then we waited some more. Still no sound of another dog sled or Marco.
Wind seems to be slacking off some. And blizzard ain't far off. Wind always slacks off first. First game of pinochle. What's the matter with all of you? You ain't spoke one decent word to me since I got here. Anybody think I was a wolf that sneaked in out of the woods or something? Well, why don't somebody say something?
How'd you get that bruise under your eye, Blakey?
How'd you get that bruise? You sit around and stare at me for a couple of hours, and then the only thing you can think of to say is, how'd you get that bruise?
What happened? Did you get in a fight with somebody?
I got the bruise from a rock.
But how?
I was working in the tunnel we drove. Some rock fell out of the roof, and a piece of it hit me. That's how I got it.
You're lying.
What's the matter with you, Belle?
You're lying, I said. You fought with Marco. That's how you got it.
I ain't fought with nobody. Why would I fight with him? We was partners.
Was, Blakey?
I mean, we still are.
What did you fight about, Blakey?
Nothing. We didn't fight about nothing.
You gotta have some reason, Blakey. Your partners don't start fighting over nothing.
I mean, we wasn't fighting. Look, I don't know why Marco in here. I ain't his mother. Maybe he changed his mind. He said he was gonna be here. That's all I know about it.
Then why isn't he? He left before you did. You said so yourself. Where is he, Blakey?
I don't know. What's the matter with all of you? You think I killed him or something?
Yeah.
What?
That's right, Blakey. We think maybe you killed him.
Oh, come off of it. You're out of your mind. You're kidding. That's what it is, a joke, huh? Me killing old Marco. That's a laugh for you.
You're going to tell us about it, huh?
About what? There ain't nothing to tell. Now, look, if I had done something, why would I come straight here where you're all friends of his, where you're expecting?
Where else would you go?
Well, to Jackson River.
They don't have room to put a man up.
All right, I could head for Dawson or south to Whitehorse.
Storm too close, no time. Here only place.
All right, answer me one thing. Why? Why do you think I kill him?
Show him, LeClaire.
Yeah. This might be the reason, Blakey.
You've been going through my stuff. You got no right.
We did it anyway. Now, what about this?
I was going to tell you about that. I figured I'd wait and make it a kind of surprise.
Surprise?
It's rich quartz, Blakey. Must have opened up quite a pocket.
It's the richest lode between here and Mackenzie Bay.
Not rich enough for two?
Marco didn't even know about it. I stumbled onto it after he'd already left. That's why I was keeping it for a surprise.
These two, Blakey? Were you keeping these for a surprise? I gave him those gloves and that writing tablet. And I knitted that pair of socks last winter.
Well, he told me to pack up anything he'd missed, bring it along. That proves he was figuring to come here.
Why?
Now, look, I know you're worried about Marco and all.
Do you?
But you're thinking the wrong way. All of you, you're all wrong. You're mixed up.
You're saying you didn't kill Marco. But you ain't saying it very good.
Joe, show him what you found in the sled.
You've got no right to bother my thing.
This. That's your knife, Blakey?
It was a fox. I shot it on the trail. Skinned it for the dogs. That's how the blood got on it.
You skinned fox? What'd you do with skin?
I left it. I'm a miner, not a trapper. I don't know anything about skins. Now, look, the whole bunch of you. I'm getting fed up with this. Questions accusing me. What do you think you are, a court of some kind? I don't have to answer anything. I ain't on trial. I'm going to turn in.
Next morning, the barometer dropped again, and we knew that blizzard would hit any minute. All that day we sat huddled around at wood stove, not talking, just thinking about Marco and Blakey. And just after dark, Blakey went outside to settle his dog team. By the time he came back in, we decided.
What are you all staring at?
Blakey, we're going to give you a trial.
A trial for what?
Jury of your peers. That's the only law we got. That's all we're likely to have till spring. Robertson bypassed as he got on through to Dawson to beat the blizzard. It's just you and us, Blakey.
You're crazy. You ain't the law.
If you got anything to say in your own defense, any explanation...
I ain't doing no more talking. You can't do nothing to me.
Whatever you said, Blakey.
Let's vote. Get it over with.
If he won't talk, there ain't no use asking him anything else. I say he killed Marco.
One vote guilty.
Two. Of course he did it.
Joe?
He killed.
That's three guilty and mine makes four. That's unanimous, Blakey.
And just what do you aim to do about it?
We got to decide.
Well, I'll decide for you. You ain't gonna do nothing. And you know why?
Because of this.
Grab him, Joe.
Hold it.
Don't none of you move. Looks a little different now, don't
it? Put it down, Blakey. That rifle won't get you out of this.
It won't, huh? Well, I'd say it's made some changes already. 4-1. You felt mighty big, didn't you? Well, how do you feel now? Things is kind of even up a little, ain't they?
You can't hold us at gunpoint all winter.
I ain't figuring to. I'm getting out of here. And none of you better try to stop me.
Where are you planning to go?
That's my business. But I sure ain't going to stay around here no longer. Now, all of you, stay right where you are.
He's crazy. Where could he get to?
Nowheres, maybe, but he ain't thought that far. All he knows right now is he's going to get away.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
Get your rifles. We'll go after him.
You are listening to Judgment Day at Triple Deer, tonight's presentation of Escape. And now, Escape and the second act of Judgment Day at Triple Deer.
Tracking down a fellow man is not a pleasant thing, even though he's crazed with fear. But there was no choice. The four of us stood a moment longer looking at the door that had slammed shut behind Blakey, and then...
Ready?
Yeah. Yeah, let's get it over with. Come on.
Don't let him get away.
Joe, you see, can you pick up his trail?
He couldn't have got far. He ain't had enough time.
Here.
What?
Track start here. Come.
It's pitch dark to me. How can you see any tracks?
Me see. Come. He seems to be heading back on the trail.
On foot, without even snowshoes. He's out of his mind.
Guilt and fear, they do funny things to a man.
Leave trail now. Turn this way.
Oh.
Into the woods. Come.
Wrong. Get away from them. That's all he could think about there in the cabin.
Crazy. Clean out of his senses.
Go on back. Stay away from me.
He's hauled up in that storage shed up on the creek bank. I saw the flash.
Why don't we leave him there? Let him get snowed in. Let him starve.
No. When a man begins to starve, he gets dangerous. He has that rifle and there's a whole case of ammunition in the shed. He could hang around the cabin and pick us off one at a time.
Me go. Me bring him.
You think you can slip up on him, Joe?
You talk. He can. Make noise. I go.
Blakey! Get out of here! Go back to the post.
Maybe this will shake him up a little.
You're wasting your time. I got cover and you ain't.
That dirty murderer. I'll blast him out of there.
Hold it. You might hit the Indian.
Why don't you tell us about it, Blakey? About Marco. Get it off your chest. Where did you bury him? I didn't bury nobody. You mean you're laughing for the wolves?
You stop saying that, I'll get every last one of you before.
Hey, Joe must have got inside.
You come now. Everything all right. No trouble. You come.
All right. Let's go get him. We dragged him back to the fold. We tied his hands together behind his back and locked him in one of the bunk rooms. Then we sat, the four of us. We didn't say much. Not looking at one another, knowing what we had to decide. Putting it off as long as we could. And then it was Belle who had been in love with Marco and was ready not to go to pieces any minute. Finally brought it out in the open.
We can't sit here and put it off all winter. We gotta decide what we're gonna do. Get it over with.
I suppose you're right.
You know I'm right. What's the matter with all of you? What are you afraid of?
It's a big responsibility, Belle.
Not from me. Maybe you can feel sympathy for him, but I don't. He don't even count. 100 of him would make up for Marco.
Perhaps you're right, Belle, but what I was thinking, storm ain't hit yet, and as long as there's a chance Robertson will still come, well, maybe we ought to wait and leave it to him. After all, he's a law. It's his job.
The redcoat no come now. Blizzard too close. You go very fast to Dawson. No one spend winter here. Joe is right. We can't figure on turning Blackie over to the police. Robertson's already probably in Dawson. And we can try to keep him prisoner clear through the winter. I guess we all agree on that.
You know what I agree on.
So I guess we better make up our minds, huh?
Mine's made up now. You know that?
Yes, I know that, Bell. Lord, my people say, man who kills friends must die always.
I don't know, LeClaire. Killing a man in a fight or a battle when you're crazy mad, that's one thing. But doing it in cold blood like this, well, it ain't easy to face it. It ain't the same.
I guess we all feel that way about it. None of us want to do it. It looks to me like we don't have much choice.
We don't, and the sooner the better.
I don't know. Mountie might still come.
Make up your mind, Higgins. If you're afraid, say so.
Well, it ain't that.
You agree with the rest of us, then, or don't you?
Yeah, I agree.
Well, it's settled then. Well, we might as well get it over with, him.
How are you thinking to do it, LeClaire?
Well, hanging, that's the usual way, I guess. That roof pole outside the front of the cabin, we could take him up on the roof and tie the other end of the rope to that pole. Hmm? And then make him step off.
How much of a fall does it take?
I only seen it done once, down in the States.
You wouldn't do that. Have it go wrong. No call from the suffer anymore, Ness.
No, we do careful. We plan it all out.
Stop talking about it and do it. Do it and get it over with.
We're going to, Bell.
Well, get on with it.
Oh, Joe, get a ladder up against the eaves out there, huh? Higgins and me, we cut a piece of rope. Good. Now, I guess we better tell him.
You've decided to hang me.
Blake.
You don't even know what you're saying. People don't sit down and decide they're going to hang somebody and expect to get away with it. You can't take the law into your own hands.
You're just making it harder for us, Blakely.
Harder for you? I'll make it harder for you when Robertson shows up.
Robertson ain't going to show up.
You're out of your mind.
We're going to have to drag you, Blakey.
You'll drag nobody. I'll walk. See just how far you're planning to go with it.
All right, we go out through the main room.
Belle, you know what you're figuring to do?
Yeah.
Well, do something. Stop him. You're a woman, Belle. You're different.
I wish there were 10 of you, Blakey, so they could hang you 10 times instead of once. Get him out of here. Take him out and get it over with.
Yeah, come on.
She's crazier than the rest of you. It's all crazy. It's all like a nightmare.
Watch your step, LeClaire. That crust is breathing. It's
like, yeah.
Like it ain't real. It really happened. Not to me, anyway.
You know, that wind has died down some.
Always does just before the blizzard hits.
All right, Blakey. Climb up on the roof.
Roof?
Yeah,
and you climb the ladder, you'll want us to help you.
I can climb.
Go up there by the ridgepole, Blakey, up there where Joe is standing.
Yeah, better let me help you. A lot of snow on the roof. Ain't easy with your hands tied that way.
All ready, roof tight. Everything ready. Oh. Well, might as well we get on with it, huh?
Maybe you better tie it around his neck, LeClaire.
Huh?
You seen it done once.
If I can remember. Hey, Blakey, come stand closer to the edge here, huh?
Careful, LeClaire. It's dark. Don't slip.
Yeah, that's fine. Right there now.
Look, it's a joke, huh? That's what. You're just trying to scare me so we can laugh about it afterwards.
Oh, still, Blakey.
A joke. Still. A real good joke.
All right, that's fine.
That's very funny.
Well, looks like we're ready.
Yeah. Well, you got any last words, Blakey? I guess you better say them now. Jump now.
Joe.
You jump.
Stop pushing.
Jump now. We went inside. We left him swinging there, figured to take him down in daylight and bury him. I opened a bottle of brandy and we drank some fast in gulps. We needed it because it wasn't easy to do it. Not in cold blood that way. It didn't change much either when we stopped to think about it. It didn't bring Marco back to life, killing Blakey. Even Belle, who was crazy for revenge, was feeling sick. Then we got to thinking about Robertson, too, how he never missed stopping by before on his last trip out to Dawson. And then Joe heard it.
Dog! Here, dog! Sled, come!
Robertson!
I told you we ought to wait. Now we're in for it.
We gotta do something. We gotta think of something to tell him. Make up a story.
What, with Blakey still hanging out there? What story?
But we gotta do something.
All we can do is tell him the truth and hope he sees it the way we did. He's an old-timer in the North. He'll understand.
We'll make him understand. He'll be snowed in with us here. All us together for the rest of the winter. We'll make him understand.
We did right. At least we know it. I think he will. Got a steak and a drink for a hungry man? Well?
Marco.
Why all the surprise? I promised you I'd be here, didn't I, Belle? Stopped over a couple of days in Jackson River. Dang, I got snowed in. Say, did Blakey make it all right? He was going to leave the mine a couple of days after I did.
In showbiz, that's what we call leaving them hanging. Though I bet the friend was not at all happy to discover he missed the execution of his murderer. But justice is snowblind, and everyone is guaranteed the right to a speedy trial. Unfortunately, we must adjourn for a week before our next exciting cliffhanger. Alfred Hitchcock present saying, hold on to the end of your rope until then. Thank you.
Oh, Vampirella, that Alfie baby is so scary.
Such a funny guy, such a play on words he does.
I tell you, he's one scary, scary dude.
Oh, and that was a scary, scary episode.
I tell you, I think my best line was when they were about to push him off the edge. Everyone was so helpful, you know, saying, watch out, don't fall over, it's really dark. I mean, they're about to hang the guy, but what the heck?
Ironic, wouldn't you say?
Those Alaskaners, I tell you, Hoseheads, they have one sense of humor.
Boy.
Hey, and speaking of humor, we've got the scariest clown in the show business up next.
Could it be?
Yes, the Hulk. So take it away, Hulk baby.
The Hulk, alter ego of Dr. David Banner. The Hulk, the other side of the coin. The raging soul of an otherwise peaceful man. The incredible Hulk. Huge, powerful, unthinking, destructive, wanted for murder. David Bruce Banner, gentle physician and healer, now a fugitive from himself, living in the shadow of the monster within, forever fearful of its next outburst of violence, desperate in his search for an answer, a cure.
There's got to be a way. I can't go on like this, a prisoner of my own emotions.
For it is anger which triggers the altered molecular mechanism within his body that turns the gentle physician into a rampaging monster.
I can't go on forever wondering if there's a killer within me, never knowing where or when he might emerge, forever hiding my true identity.
David Bruce Banner, calling himself David Benson, man on the run, on the road to everywhere, searching, always searching.
As the Hulk has just rescued his friend, Betty Talbot, from the fury of an erupting volcano. Even Hulk knows that their chances of being found on this island are slim. But, miracle.
Betty, there is plane. Go to them. They will take you home. Go. Hulk will be all right.
Steve, look. A woman. Good Lord, it's General Ross's daughter. Let's get her out of here fast, before this whole island explodes.
The men tore out of the helicopter. They thought Betty Talbot dead. But sometimes the gods are kind.
Good to see you, Mrs. Talbot. Anyone else around? My co-pilot thought he saw someone.
No, Captain. I'm alone.
Okay, then. Let's get out of here.
As we said, the gods can be kind. But will they be kind to our stowaway? Hulk, who just saved Betty's life, is flying right back into the arms of General Ross, a man whose sworn aim in life is to catch and destroy the Hulk. This same General Ross, the builder of the notorious Hulkbuster base, will be waiting to welcome back his missing daughter. Maybe Hulk should have stayed with the erupting volcano. So how does it feel getting away from that island? Bet you can't wait to see General Ross again. Your father's quite a guy.
Yes, I suppose he is.
Betty's voice. Now Hulk remembers. He got in box to be near Betty. Betty is Hulk's friend.
Mrs. Talbot, this isn't any of my business, but how did you survive on the island without help?
You're right, Lieutenant. It isn't any of your business.
Betty sounds angry. Should Hulk come out and help her? Hard for Hulk to take. Why is everything always so hard for Hulk?
Now is neither the time nor place to answer that question. This moment must be dedicated to other matters. Among them, a reunion.
You'll excuse me, won't you, Armbruster? I want to be alone when I meet my daughter.
I read you, Ross.
The reunion of father and daughter is just as it should be. The pressure in both of them disappears. Tears of happiness well up. Unfortunately, moments like this can't last.
Colonel Armbruster, the base is empty, sir. Completely deserted.
If that means what I think it means, we're in trouble. Big trouble.
Meanwhile, aboard the shuttle jet which acted as a ferry for Betty Talbot.
It's happened again. The Hulk must have relaxed for a moment. Perhaps fallen asleep. Whatever the reason, I've changed. I'm Bruce Banner again. The question now is, where am I? Looks like a military jet. I'd better find myself some camouflage.
A few moments later, a very confused Robert Bruce Banner leaves the cargo hold of the giant jet, bearing little resemblance to the world-famous physicist who designed the deadly gamma bomb, or to the green creature who is Hyde to Banner's Jekyll. Rather, he seems to be simply a wandering enlisted man.
If I remember the layout of the Hulkbuster base accurately, this air vent leads to the main underground concourse. and the concourse leads to the kitchens. One thing I learned a long time ago. Never make plans on an empty stomach.
The silent base seems strangely dead, except for the new arrivals.
Still no sign of the men who are supposed to be manning this base?
Colonel Armbruster.
What is it, Rogers?
I just returned from the radio bunker. All of the equipment has been sabotaged. Circuit smashed. Of course, we still have the radios and our jets, but...
Then what's the problem, soldier? Seems to me we've got the situation well in hand. We'll check out this desertion thing, but for the moment, it seems things are more or less under control.
Aim carefully, fool. We won't have time for a second shot.
Don't worry, partner. Once I fire this baby, those army boys will be about as much trouble as a class of first graders.
1 second. Two. And before the startled eyes of 35 professional warriors, an army jet buckles and explodes. Smoke clears.
I want 6 volunteers to hit that hangar. Rogers, Clemens, Grady, Jones, Watson.
A moment's pause, and amid the rubble...
Colonel, there's something moving in hangar 2.
Well, don't just stand there, soldier. We'll attack.
Maybe you'd better take a look-see, sir.
Eh? What in Sam Hill?
Nightmare. All his life, the man named Armbruster has been a soldier, and possibly a good one. But today, he finds himself confronted with a sight from his most tortured dreams. Not one uncrushable foe, but 2.
You hold them back with our mission. Show them we mean business, and then nobody can stop us.
Nobody in the whole wide world will ever stop us again.
You're the same kind of creature as the Hulk, a gamma ray mutant.
Wrong, fool. I'm far more powerful than that green lump. I'm the Abomination, the strongest mutant of all.
Not bad, friend. In the meantime, look at what I caught.
What is this? What do you want?
Want? Lady, we want the Hulk's blasted green hide. We kind of thought we'd team up to blast that flat-headed creep into the mall. As soon as the Hulk shows up here, and we forget to get him here with all this Hulkbuster equipment, all of you and him are gonna be dead.
12 hours, and night falls. A car with 2 young passengers moves ever closer to the sprawling Arizona complex known as Hulkbuster Base Number 1.
Jim Wilson, we've come almost 2,000 miles from New York. So you can say hi to some friends.
Tell you, honey, old General Ross and me go back more years than I... Looks like a roadblock.
12 hours, and the Hulkbuster base has been completely and effectively surrounded.
Let's see your ID. What's going on? Some sort of raid?
That's our business, mister. Your business is to get out of here before we begin to get a little suspicious.
Okay, friend. I get the general idea.
2 more hours pass.
My head... I must have been more tired than I thought. It just goes to show you a man can't lead a double life without getting pretty exhausted.
Now, that's odd. No one here. Not even a guard posted. Something's wrong. I can feel it. Dear Lord in heaven, no!
Betty, General Ross, even Colonel Armbruster, sealed into one of the Hulk-retaining cells? What in the name of sanity is going on?
Dazed, the renowned scientist can only stare. He does not hear the approach of the massive figure known as the Abomination. He doesn't hear until it's much too late.
Another one! We thought we'd captured all the humans on this base.
A fist, like a slab of iron, clamps over Banner's mouth and nose, and the abruptness of this attack causes Banner to become excited. His heart begins to pound, and in the darkness of the dimly lit corridor, Robert Bruce Banner begins to change. Then, where once stood a quiet physicist, now stands the Incredible Hulk.
He's the Rhino's baby now.
Hulk doesn't understand. Hulk wakes up, and everyone attacks him. Wait! Hulk knows you. Hulk hit you before. Hulk will do it again.
Keep back, Rhino. We can capture him with one of the Hulkbuster base's specially designed weapons.
Guns? Hulk thought only soldiers use guns. Hulk doesn't like guns. Hulk will go away.
Stop him, Abomination. Stop him.
No, he won't go far. He'll be back, and we'll be ready for him.
1 hour, time enough for Jim Wilson and his girl Talia to drive around the Hulkbuster base to find another unguarded entrance and to use it.
Not a soul in sight. And all that wreckage on the airfield.
Let's get out of here, Jim. This place gives me the...
Hulk! Big friend, am I glad to see you, especially at a time like this. Listen, do you know what's happening around here?
Jim is Hulk's friend. Maybe Jim can explain why ugly people attack Hulk.
Haltingly, the Hulk tells Jim and Talia as much as he can remember about the events of the past hour.
Well, the way it reads to me, these two goons are out to get you, Hulk. And from what you've said, well, they're willing to kill everyone on this base to do it. Looks like we don't have much choice. We'll have to use Talia as a decoy.
A decoy? Are you out of your mind, Jim Wilson? You want to play hero? Go ahead. But count me out.
Honey, I'm not going to argue with you. But I'll tell you this. If you don't help, there isn't one of us who'll get off this base alive.
A short while later, in the central control complex.
These gadgets read positive. The Hulk's still in the vicinity. Pretty soon he'll be ours. Then once we've... someone outside. We can't let her get away. She's heading toward the surface. Do you think she heard about the bomb?
Grab her and find out. But when the two lumbering allies reach topside...
She's gone!
You let her escape.
She can't do us any harm. The bomb's set. Not even the Hulk can...
Sounds like things are getting pretty hot and heavy upstairs. The longer the Hulk can keep those jokers busy, the better my chances of reaching General Ross.
Soon, outside the Hulk retaining cell containing the captured Hulkbusters...
General Ross, can you read me? This is Jim Wilson, General.
Is there anything I can do to get you dudes out of there?
Jim, thank heaven someone found us. Don't worry about us now, Jim. There's something far more important you have to take care of. The Gamma Bomb.
Gamma Bomb? You mean like the thing which turned Doc Banner into the Hulk?
Precisely. The abomination has set it to go off in less than 3 minutes.
But why would he do a dumb thing like that?
Because he knew the Hulk was still on the base, and he expects to escape before the bomb can explode.
Wee-o! Tell me what to do, General. Fast!
5 seconds later, after Jim has listened to Ross's hurried instructions and has set the cell intercom on maximum volume...
Take the main corridor to side passage 6G. There's a ladder there, Jim. Go down 2 levels. You'll find a pressure chamber. You've got 2 minutes, Jim. Follow this passage to the end. Make a left, go 2 doors, turn right. Hurry, lad, hurry. 90 seconds. Do you see the control panel? It should be to your left.
Got it.
It's a letter combination. The letters are C-H-A-O-S. 68 seconds, Jim.
Cut it out, man. I've got the top open.
We're not out of the woods yet, son. You still have to reverse the detonation fuse.
Oh, great. How am I supposed to do that?
I wish I could tell you, son, but I don't know how the abomination said it. It's up to you, Jim. 47 seconds.
I said cut that out. Phew.
There's a small pin. Touch it lightly. See which way it gives.
I'm trying it, General Ross. It's moving a bit. Now what?
Pick a direction, son, and pull.
A pause. 3 seconds.
Bingo! The pin's out, General. The bomb's off. Fire out. I did it.
Meanwhile...
Hulk is tired of you hitting him. So Hulk will stop you. Like this.
I'll handle this walking tank show, Rhino. You back off. Get ready to ram him. Then we'd better get out of here. That G-bomb must be ready to blast.
Hulk is sick of fighting. Hulk wants to finish it.
That's only the Rhino in the abomination can.
This is stupid. Hulk doesn't like it. Hulk can beat either of you. But Jim said to wait. Hulk has waited long enough. So now, Hulk will leave.
No. No!
There's an old saying about an immovable object meeting an irresistible force. Witness such a meeting and its result.
Big boys, Earth Hulk is. Why won't the world ever leave Hulk alone?
And so much for the Rhino and the Abomination. Meanwhile, the troops surrounding Hulkbuster Base Number 1 receive the long-awaited signal.
Lieutenant, look! They're telling us the danger's ended.
Hulkbuster base is back in control.
Thus, 1/2 hour later, we find ourselves attending a most unusual press conference in which the star figure is...
The Hulk! Can you tell our audience exactly how you defeated both the Abomination and the Rhino?
Take Stick out of Hulk's face, or Hulk will break it.
Hulk, can I thank you?
You're the one who hates Hulk, who wants to destroy him.
I'm also the one who owes his life to you, as we all do. Maybe there's something I should learn from that. Maybe I've been...
Holy cow! Behind you, Hulk! Look out! Look!
Understand. What the devil is the meaning of this? Don't you realize what you've done?
My duty, Ross. My patriotic duty. I've captured the Hulk!
A hero 1 minute, a captive the next. So it goes in the life of our huge friend. But the Hulk will find some way out. He always does.
I got six. That's all there is.
6 × 1 = 6. 1 × 6.
He got six. I put mine with his, and we got 12.
6 × 2 = 12. 2 × 6.
I got six. You got six. She got six. We got 18 all together, if we can get them all together.
6 × 3 = 18. 3 × 6.
I got six in my right hand, six in my left hand, six on my head. You got six in your pocket. Put them all on the floor, and that's 24.
6 × 4 = 24. 4 × 6.
I got six red hens. They laid 5 eggs each. All the eggs hatched out, and the yard was full of 30 little chicks.
6 × 5 = 30. 5 × 6.
One fine day, they all started in delay. I got 36 eggs, and I took them in the house, and I put them in boxes. 6 eggs each, 6 boxes.
Oh, 6 × 6 = 36. 6 × 6.
Going to the candy store. I take 6 of these, and 6 of those, and 6 of them, and 6 of the others, and also 6 of the red, and 6 of the white, and 6 of the blue. I put them in one bag. That's 42.
6 × 7 = 42.
7 × 6.
Oh, I'm throwing down jacks, picking up 6. I made 8 tricks and didn't miss a lick.
6 × 8 = 48. 8 × 6. 9 hungry men had $6 each.
Aww.
And that's 54 bucks, but they were out of luck. 54 bucks won't buy dinner downtown, not for 9. Then there were 6 hungry men. They had $9 each.
Yeah.
And they went downtown, and the waiter said, "Sit down." Oh, it makes a big difference how you spread it around.
6 × 9 = 54. 9 × 6.
See that prince over there, huh?
Yeah.
The one with the fuzzy hair. He's got 6 rings on every finger. He don't wash no dishes, not with 60 diamonds.
6 × 10 = 60. 10 × 6.
He brought along 11 camels. Ain't that nice?
Ain't that nice?
Each one loaded down with 6 casks of oil and spice. Brought quite a price.
6 × 11 = 66. 11 × 6.
He had 12 wives. He better be rich. Each one had 6 kids, 6 children each.
6 × 12 = 72. 12 × 6.
But me, I got 6.
That's
all there is.
That's all there is.
6 × 1 = 6.
6 × 1 = 6.
1 × 6.
1 × 6.
I got 6.
I got 6.
That's all there is.
That's all there is.
6 × 1 = 6.
6 × 1 = 6.
1 × 6.
1 × 6.
I got 6.
I got 6.
Wait, where are you going?
Coming soon. Don't miss History of the World, Part 2. See Hitler on Ice. See a Viking funeral. See Jews in Space.
Jews are in space, presuming a long protecting the Hebrew race.
That Jules in Space, what better introduction can we have for the Hitchhiker's Guide in Space? Certainly not for Arthur Dent is in space. We left them there last week, but good news for all you reluctant but nevertheless diehard followers. He is going to be, how should we say, free this week in his fifth and fourth and final episode. Yes, but I'm not so sure that most of you think of liberation that could smell. Conventional term, sort of the way that Vampirella and I are liberated, yes? But I don't want to give it away, so without further ado, take it away, Hitchhikers!
Welcome to Episode 4 of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But first, let us review the occurrences of the previous three episodes leading up to this, the final episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I have got to tell you the most important thing you've ever heard. I've got to tell you now, and I've got to tell you in that pub there.
Why?
Because you're going to need a very stiff drink. How long have we known each other, Arthur?
5 years, maybe six. Most of it seemed to make some kind of sense at the time.
All right. How would you react if I said that I'm not from Guildford after all, but from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse?
I don't know. Why, do you think it's the sort of thing you feel you're likely to say?
Drink up. The world's about to end.
Fleet of flying saucers, what do you think it is? Quick, you've got to get hold of this rock.
Flying saucers?
Just that, it's a Bogon constructor fleet. A Bogon constructor fleet.
People of Earth, your attention, please. This is Prosthetnik Fogonjax of the Galactic Hyperspace Planning Council. As you will no doubt be aware, the plans for the development of the outlying regions of the western spiral arm of the galaxy require the building of a hyperspace express route through your star system, and regrettably, your planet is one of those scheduled for demolition. The process will take slightly less than 2 of your Earth minutes. Thank you very much. Energize the demolition beams.
If I asked where the hell we were, would I regret it?
We're safe.
Oh, good.
We're in a small galley cabin in one of the spaceships of the Vogon Constructor Fleet.
Ah, this is obviously some strange usage of the word safe that I wasn't previously aware of.
Here, have a look at this.
What is it?
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's a sort of electronic book. It'll tell you everything you want to know. That's its job.
I like the cover. Don't panic. It's the first helpful or intelligible thing anybody's said to me all day.
That's why it sells so well. I'm researching the new edition. That's my job. Fun, isn't it?
It's amazing.
Unfortunately, I got stuck on the Earth for rather longer than I intended. I came for a week and was stranded for 15 years.
We picked them up during a crucial 30-second period.
I've got a note of that factor here.
So have I.
Put it all together.
And we have a total improbability factor of exactly...
Well, it's pretty vast, but it's not infinite. At what point did we pick them up?
Infinite improbability level.
Yeah. I got a bad feeling about one big whack of improbability still to be accounted for.
At your service.
I suppose you'll want to see the aliens now. Do you want me to sit in a corner and rust or just fall apart where I'm standing?
Show them in, please, Marvin.
I'm not staying in the same room with that robot.
Ford, hi, how are you? Glad you could drop in.
Say, Ford, great to see you. You're looking well. The extra arm suits you. Nice ship you've stolen.
You mean you know this guy?
Know him? He's... Oh, Zaphod. This is a friend of mine, Arthur Dent. I saved him when his planet blew up.
Oh, sure. Hi, Arthur. Glad you could make it.
And Arthur, this is my...
We've met.
What?
Oh, have we?
What do you mean you've met? This is Zaphod Beeblebrox from Beetlejuice 5, you know, not bloody Martin Smith from Croydon.
I don't care. We've met, haven't we, Zaphod? Or should I say, Phil?
What?
You'll have to remind me. I have a terrible memory for species. Hey, Ford.
It was at a party 6 months ago.
I rather doubt that.
On Earth. England.
Look.
London. Islington.
Oh, that party.
Zaphod, you don't mean to say you've been on that miserable little planet as well, do you?
No, of course not. Well, I may just have dropped in briefly on my way somewhere.
He gatecrashed this fancy dress party, barged up to the girl I was talking to and said, "Hey, doll, is this guy boring you? Why don't you talk to me instead? I'm from a different planet."
Zaphod?
Yes, he only had the two arms and he called himself Phil, but there was
absolutely... But you have to admit he did turn out to be from another planet.
What? Good God. It's her, Tricia McMillan.
Improbability sum now complete. And for my next trick,
I... Oh, shut up, will you?
Just trying to create a pleasant social atmosphere.
What on earth are you doing here?
Same as you. I hitched a lift. After all, with a degree in maths and another in astrophysics, it was either that or the dole queue again on Monday, wasn't it? Anyway, hi. Nice to see you again.
But this is all impossible.
No, just very, very improbable.
Oh, God. Ford, this is Trillian. Hi. Trillian, this is my semi-cousin Ford, who shares three of the same mothers as me. Hi. Trillian, is this sort of thing going to happen every time we use the infinite improbability drive?
Very probably, I'm afraid.
Zaphod Beeblebrox, this is a very large drink.
Hi there, this is Eddie, your shipboard computer. And I just want to mention here that we are now moving into orbit around the legendary planet of Magrathea.
But I found what I was after. A passageway leading down into the interior of the planet.
Yeah?
And that's where we have to go. Where no organic life form has trod these 5 million years. Into the very depths of time itself. Can it, Marvin?
Well, come on, if we're going.
Right. Hey, Earthman.
Arthur.
Could you sort of keep the robot with you and guard this end of the passageway, okay?
Guard? What from? You just said there's no one here.
Yeah, well, just for safety, okay?
You know we built planets.
Well, yes, I sort of gathered.
Fascinating, Drake. Come, we must go. Even now, our race is being revived from its 5 million year old slumber.
Excuse me, what is your name, by the way?
My name? My name is Slarty Bartfast. Earthman, we are now deep in the heart of Magrathea. I should warn you that the chamber we are about to be projected into does not literally exist within our planet. It is simply the gateway into a vast tract of hyperspace. It may disturb you.
Oh.
It scares the willies out of me. Here we go. Welcome to our factory floor. This is where we make most of our planets. The planet forges of Magrathea. We have been awakened to perform just one extraordinary commission. There, in the distance before us.
My God, the Earth!
And now for the fourth and final episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
The Earth Mark II, in fact. We're making a copy from our original blueprints.
Original blueprints? Are you trying to tell me you made the Earth?
Oh, yes. Did you ever go to a place, I think it was called Norway?
No, I didn't.
Pity, that was one of mine. Won an award, you know, lovely crinkly edges. I was terribly sorry to hear it had been destroyed.
You were?
5 minutes too early.
What?
Shocking cock-up. The mice were furious.
The mice were furious?
Yes.
Oh, yes, well, so I expect were the dogs and cats and duck-billed platypuses. But really, I don't see
why. They weren't running the planet, were they?
No, but I...
And the mice were.
Huh?
So they were rather upset that it was destroyed 5 minutes too early, so we've got to build another one.
Sorry, are we talking about the little white furry things with the cheese fixation and women standing screaming on tables in early 60s sitcoms?
Earthman, it is sometimes hard to follow your mode of speech. Remember, I have been asleep inside this planet of Magrathea for 5 million years and know little of these early 60s sitcoms of which you speak. But these creatures you call mice are merely the protrusion into our dimension of vast, hyper-intelligent, pan-dimensional beings. The whole business with the cheese and the squeaking, it's just a front. They've been experimenting on you, I'm afraid.
No, come on, that's the wrong way round. We used to experiment on them.
you know, behavioral research and so on.
Such subtlety.
What?
How better to disguise their real natures and how better to guide your thinking? Suddenly running down the maze the wrong way, eating the wrong bit of cheese, unexpectedly dropping dead of myxomatosis? Earthman, I'm afraid I must tell you that your planet and people have formed the matrix of an organic computer, running a 10-million-year research program to find the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything.
Oh.
You see, they really are particularly clever, hyper-intelligent, pan-dimensional beings. However, in the field of management relations, they're absolutely shocking.
Really?
Yes, you see, well, every time they give me an order, I just want to jump on a table and scream.
I can see that would be a problem.
There are, of course, many problems connected with life, of which some of the most popular are, why are people born, why do they die, and why do they want to spend so much of the intervening time wearing digital watches? Many millions of years ago, a race of hyper-intelligent, pan-dimensional beings got so fed up with all the constant bickering about the meaning of life, which used to interrupt their favourite pastime of Brockian ultra cricket, a curious game which involved suddenly hitting people for no readily apparent reason and running away, that they decided to sit down and solve the problem once and for all. And to this end, they built themselves a stupendous supercomputer which was so amazingly intelligent that even before its databanks had been connected up, it had started from first principles with I think, therefore I am, and had got as far as deducing the existence of rice pudding and income tax before anyone managed to turn it off. Could a mere computer solve the problem of life, the universe, and everything? Fortunately for posterity, there exists this recording of what happened when the computer was given its monumental task.
What is this great task for which I, Deep Thought, the second greatest computer in the universe of time and space, have been called into existence?
Oh, Deep Thought computer, the task we have designed you to perform is this. We want you to tell us the answer.
The answer? The answer to what?
Life.
The universe.
Everything.
Tricky.
Can you do it?
Yes, I can do it.
There is an answer? A simple answer?
Yes. Life, the universe, and everything. There is an answer. But I'll have to think about it.
Excuse me.
What's happening out there?
We demand admission.
Come on, you can't keep us out.
We demand that you can't keep us out.
Who are you? What do you want?
I am Magic Thighs.
And I demand that I am Vroomfondle.
It's all right, you don't need to demand that.
Sorry. All right, I am Vroomfondle, and that is not a demand. That is a solid fact. What we demand is solid facts.
No, we don't. That is precisely what we don't demand.
Sorry. We don't demand solid facts.
Right.
What we demand is a total absence of solid facts. I demand that I may or may not be Vroomfondle.
Look, but who are you anyway?
We are philosophers.
Though we may not be.
Yes, we are. We're quite definitely here as representatives of the Amalgamated Union of Philosophers, Sages, Luminaries and other professional thinking persons.
Right.
And we want this machine off, and we want it off now.
What is all this?
We demand that you get rid of it.
What's the problem?
I'll tell you what the problem is. Demarcation, that's the problem.
We demand that demarcation may or may not be the problem.
You just let the machines get on with the adding up and we'll take care of the eternal verities, thank you very much.
Right.
Under law, the quest for ultimate truth is quite clearly the prerogative of your working thinkers.
Right.
Any bloody machine goes and actually finds it and we're straight out of a job, aren't we? I mean, well, what's the use of our sitting up all night saying they may or...
Or may not be
a god if this machine gives you his telephone number the next morning.
We demand guaranteed, rigidly defined areas of doubt and uncertainty.
Might I make an observation at this point?
You keep out of this metal nose!
We demand that that machine not be allowed to think about this problem.
All I wanted to say...
We'll go on strike.
That's right. You'll have a National Philosopher's Strike on your hands.
Whom will that inconvenience?
Never you mind who it will inconvenience, you box of blacklegging binary bits. Right. It'll hurt, Buster. It'll hurt.
There is no terror in your threats.
Oh.
All I want to say is that I am now irrevocably committed to computing the answer to life, the universe, and everything. But the program will take me 7.5 million years to run.
7.5 million years?
And it occurs to me that running a program like this is bound to cause sensational public interest. And so, any philosophers, such as perhaps yourselves, who are quick off the mark, are going to clean up in the prediction business.
Prediction business? What's that?
You just get on the pundit circuit. You all go on the chat shows and the colour supplements and violently disagree with each other about what answer I'm eventually going to produce. And if you get yourselves clever agents, you'll be on the gravy train for life.
Bloody hell. Now that's what I call thinking. Here, Vroom Fondel, why do we never think of things like that?
Dunno. Think our minds must be too highly trained, Magic Thighs.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And so, Vroom Fondle and Magic Thighs, the interesting pundits the universe had ever known, and thousands upon thousands of generations later, the great day for which this race of hyper-intelligent, pan-dimensional beings had waited, somewhat impatiently, dawned.
Oh, people who wait in the shadow of deep thought, honored descendants of Vroom Fondle and Magic Thighs, the time of waiting is over. 7.5 million years our race has waited for this great and hopefully enlightening day, the day of the answer. Never again will we wake up in the morning and think, who am I? What is my purpose in life? Does it really, cosmically speaking, matter if I don't get up and go to work? For today, we will finally learn once and for all the plain and simple answer to all these nagging little problems of life, the universe, and everything. From today, we can enjoy our games of Brockian ultra cricket in the firm and comfortable knowledge that the meaning of life is now well and truly sorted out.
The time is nearly upon us. I detect a change in the computer. It's suddenly looking a lot more relaxed.
75,000 generations ago, our ancestors set this program in motion. In all that time, we will be the first to hear the computer speak.
Oh, an awesome prospect.
We are the ones who will hear the answer to the great question of life.
The universe.
And everything.
Deep Thought prepares to speak.
Good evening.
Good evening. Oh, Deep Thought, do you have you a... That is...
An answer for you?
Yes.
Yes, I have.
There really is one?
There really is one.
To everything? To the great question of life, the universe, and everything?
Yes.
And are you ready to give it to us?
I am.
Now?
Now. Though I don't think you're going to like it.
Doesn't matter. We must know it. Now.
Now?
Yes, now.
All right.
Well?
You're really not going to like it.
Tell us.
All right. The answer to everything.
Yes?
Life, the universe, and everything.
Yes?
Is.
Yes?
Is.
Yes?
42.
We're going to get lynched, you know that.
It was a tough assignment.
42? I mean, is that all we've waited for, all that money?
May I be permitted to make an observation?
7.5 million years' work.
I checked it very thoroughly, and that definitely is the answer. I think the problem, essentially, is that you've never actually said what the question is.
But it was the ultimate question, the question of life, the universe, and everything.
Yes. But what actually is it?
Well,
you know, why is...
What?
What sort of... When... everything.
Just everything,
you know.
Exactly. Now, once you know what the question actually is, you'll know what the answer means.
Oh, terrific.
Look, all right, all right. Now, can you please tell us the question?
The ultimate question?
Yes.
Of life, the universe, and everything?
Yes.
Tricky.
But can you do it?
No.
Oh, God.
But I'll tell you who can.
But who? Please, tell us, please.
I speak of the computer that is to come after me. A computer whose merest operational parameters I am not worthy to calculate. And yet, I will design it for you. A computer to calculate the ultimate question. A computer of such infinite and subtle complexity that organic life itself shall form part of its operational matrix. And you yourselves shall take on the forms of humble rodents and go down into the computer.
This is getting needlessly messy.
Down to navigate its 10-million-year program. Yes, I shall design this computer for you, and I shall name it also unto you, and it shall be called the
Oh, well, I think we pulled a little fast one on all our people out there. We told them it was going to be the final episode, and we lied. Well, they should have been able to tell by the clock on the wall. You know, when you gotta go, you gotta go. That's true. But believe us, we promise on our souls that next week we will air the final half of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It'll be part 4.5. But until then, you know what time it is, so Vostada Gente, take it away. Wild. I just love that Vostada Gente.
Returns control of your radio device to you until next week.
Cantar y se puso a contar su buena fortuna. El barrio estaba dormido, llena brillaba la luna. De pronto un ladrón salpicado en neón salió como un tigre desde el callejón y le puso al borracho un magnífico.